I'm Kevin Jones.
And I'm Chris Moore.
And we started the Homos on Haunted Hill so that we can throw a party. A horror film party. It'll be quite amusing.
There'll be madmen and chainsaws and ghosts and perhaps even a few murders. You're all invited. Kevin?
Yes.
Might I interest you in... It's not a cult. It's not a cult. So I just want you to know that. It's not scary, but it's a grouping of like-minded individuals for world betterment.
Well, I read the brochure, and the brochure did specifically say this is not a cult in big, you know, bold letters. So I believe you.
There's a little bit of assisted suicide. It's not a big deal, okay? It's not.
Yeah.
They're perfectly happy. You know, they're just becoming one with nature and the world. Mm-hmm. It's nothing mm-hmm. to be scared of. We're not scary people here. We're not.
No. We have these cute red lanterns that are very fashionable, yes. Really. They look
Don't
great.
Don't you want to join with the red lanterns? Does that not sell you? I mean, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely one of the most effective cult movies.
Oh, completely.
There.
Yes. It is so scary.
Yeah. Yeah. That last act is just hit you in the face, you know?
With like a frying pan.
Yeah.
I mean,
Oof. Oof.
It definitely dislocates some bones when it hits you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very frightening. Very scary movie.
It is. And on a relatively low budget and just in one location and just relying on sort of the relationships between people and just, it's just very effective in many ways.
Yeah, it's a slow burn, but it kind of just gets under your skin. Like at first you're like, is there a reason I should be feeling so unsettled? Like it's just a dinner party.
Right.
You know, like maybe this guy's just got some issues and he's not sure how to handle them and he's maybe just seeing something there that's not really there. But then you're like, why is that woman living with them who just walks around without underwear and just
right
like I don't
why
know.
Are they locking the doors and there's
yeah,
apparently
stop locking
bars
the
on
doors.
The bars on the windows or something they mentioned at one point. It's yeah.
And where the hell is Choi? Where's Choi?
Where's Choi?
He was supposed to be here. Damn it, Choi. You had one job. Be here on time. Now everyone is scared.
Where was he?
Scaring them to death.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's a pretty good little screenplay here, too. I mean, it establishes the characters, and you get all the relationships between them. And it plays out kind of like a chamber play. This would be interesting to see on stage someday just to
I
see what they
so
do
too.
With it.
Yeah, it's very taut. It's a taut thriller.
Taut, yes. A taughty, talky thriller. Mm-hmm.
Taut and talky.
Mm-hmm. Just like I like it.
that's my favorite genre. Taut and talky. That was what we were going to call this podcast back in the day, but we were like, no.
Well, we workshop some names, but. Yeah.
Yes. That one didn't make the cut.
There's a couple moments in this that just make me cry at times. See, like I get teary-eyed when he's just like talking about his son and stuff. And, because she's like the wife in this. Hopefully y'all have watched this at this point. If not, please go.
Oh God, I hope so.
Watch this as always. But
yes,
you know, she's a fucking mess and she's totally delusional and, you know, has decided not to feel her emotions, but instead just basically move on and pretend like everything is okay. And he confronts her a couple times and it's just really sad. It kind of reminds me of like Ordinary People, like just with the mom and that, she's so like, you know, just so fucking repressed, Mary Tyler Moore's character. It just makes you feel things.
It definitely sort of calls to mind movies like Don't Look Now or The Haunting of Julia, where it's this sort of, there's this tragedy that has taken place before the main events of the movie that's sort of kind of torn this couple apart. They've each kind of gone their own way and although in this movie, there's never really a chance that they're going to get back together. I mean, it's pretty clear, like, they've moved so far on that they're now with completely different people. But there is this feeling of like, okay, who's handling this the best? Because one of them seems happy, but they are in a cult now. And the other one is clearly not holding it together well, to the point where he might be just imagining that everybody's against him and there's something sinister going on. And so you're like, I don't know what I should be feeling, which is a great feeling to have when you're watching a movie like this. It's it just keeps you on your toes. I love it.
And it just, it slowly unfurls and you see with the flashbacks, like, very slowly over time. Like, you never see exactly what happened. Like, I looked it up online, like, because I was curious.
Something with
a baseball bat. Yeah, that's the best thing they could come up with. Is one, maybe a, one of the other kids accidentally, you know, killed their kid with a baseball bat. But yeah, it's the trauma, you know?
So much trauma. The trauma is thick. It's a confluence of trauma. Generational trauma. You know, workplace trauma, dinner party trauma, cult trauma.
Cult trauma. I mean, yeah.
There's a trauma for everything.
And you get some trauma. And you get some trauma.
Gun trauma. Knife trauma. Red lantern trauma.
It's everything. It's
everywhere.
True. Gay trauma. Here we go.
It's everywhere.
And I just love how, like, how supportive, like, all of his friends are in this too. Like, there are multiple moments in this where they just, they go up to him and they're like, "Hey, are you okay? Like, you seem like you're really struggling." And I don't know, I just like that.
Yeah, it's like they're all fairly nice people for the most part, you know.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah,
they're decent folks, and also I think it's interesting that, like, it's, you know, the people that are in the cult, it kind of showcases sort of how people get roped into these things in the first place. You know, they do have some trauma and the cult says, "We're going to help you sort through this and move on and become a better person and live your life." And they make a lot of big promises. And if you're delusional enough to believe them, then, you know, you slip right in.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always like a kernel of truth to some things in these cults, and that's why they're so easy to, like, be given. I mean, look at the cult of Donald Trump, you know, that, like, he sort of plays on the fact that, oh, the system is broken, and, like, which is to a degree true, but also, like, what he wants to replace it with is fucking terrible, and it's very similar to this movie. What they want to replace the truth of reality with is fucking, you know, disgusting and terrible. So
exactly. It's like that. I think a lot of these cults, like, it's fascinating how when you watch a documentary about a cult, like, the first half hour or so, you're like, oh, this might be a documentary about a cult that actually worked out, because you hear all the rules and you're like, oh, this sounds lovely, this sounds great, I can see, like, this sounds really nice to just move to some sort of secluded area with a bunch of loving people who just want to love, and you know, you're like, this is great. And then, you know, here comes the Kool-Aid, here comes the death and the suicide and the castration and all these horrible things that tend to happen in these cults, and you're like, oh, never mind. But you can see why on the front end people are like, this sounds like a great idea.
No, yeah, it's great. You got a sense of community. You probably share the expenses on everything, and it's free love, probably, you know, everybody's fucking everybody, but nobody really gets all that upset about it. And everything sounds okay on paper, you know, and the execution in multiple sense of the words tends to be a little more complicated.
Yeah, I could use a rewrite or two. Most of the executions of these might need to rethink it a bit.
Yeah, just workshop it a little bit. Cults, come on.
I love the commune. I love the free love. I love that stuff. But once you start, you know, being like, okay, well, you're going to dress this way and only this way, and you're only going to have sex with this one person because this is your you know, chosen love, your twin flame or some shit. I'm like, oh, no.
Too much.
This is getting scary. And they're like, we're going to have a suicide pact. I'm like, I can't. I'm busy that day. I can't do that. I'd probably skip out
the 20th.
That.
Like, I don't know.
That is a big day for me. I was going to watch The Golden Girls all day on Hulu. maybe next week? Maybe?
Yeah, I do. Good Day to Kill Myself? Pencil you in. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Can we just wait? Can we wait until the new Scream is out? You know, we can...
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, then we'll really have a reason to kill ourselves. You know?
Well, hopefully not. That is the big news, right, of the day.
That is big, yeah.
Yeah.
Nev is back. Kevin's back, but Kevin's not back. Writing. He's directing.
Huh. Question. Yeah, yeah. That was not the news I was expecting to see come out. Well, first of all, I thought the franchise was just going to be dead for a couple, several years here after everything that went down. And now, how do I say this in the most diplomatic way? I see a lot of people sort of trying to put people in one camp or the other with this. Suddenly, you're not allowed to be upset about what happened with Melissa Barrera if you are also happy about what happened, about Nev getting cast and Kevin Williamson being back. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I can feel two different things. You know, yeah, I can be upset. Yeah, I can be upset about like what sounds like a pretty shitty situation and, you know, everything that went down there, while also being happy that these two people are coming back to this franchise they've been a part of for 30 years, you know, and, you know, are doing something with it. I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible to have those two ideas in my head at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it's great news that they're back. I mean, I think that is probably the best news the franchise has had in 20 years. It's like, what are they going to do with it? I don't know what to expect. I think I'm a little burnt out with Scream. I'm just sort of like, whatever happens, happens.
Having Kevin Williamson back is great, but I hope they let him do a pass at the script, you know?
I do too. I really do.
Because that's been the biggest issue with these past couple movies. It just doesn't have his wit to it. And the reveals are always bad. Like, they just have not been good the past two movies. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, so maybe if he does get a chance to do a little revision here and there, that'll kind of boost it up. But it's like, I love Sydney. I feel like we've talked about this before, but what is there to do with her now? I mean, she hasn't really had a story arc since probably the third one, and even that one was kind of eh. I mean, there's not really much for her to do.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I talked about this when 5 came out, but I think it would have been interesting if they'd done some sort of like psychological drama type thing with her, but they're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just going to be a straight out slasher movie. It's going to, it would be interesting if maybe they bring back Mark and it becomes this, I don't know, thing about her family. I don't know. Where does she even live anymore? Did they say in the last time she showed up?
I don't remember. I don't know. I don't think they,
I don't either.
I don't think they did.
Yeah. I don't,
because it's a secret. You can't know.
It's a secret.
Even the audience can't know.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She's secluded somewhere with her. I mean, like, does she leave to like go get groceries and take her kids to school, or does she homeschool her kids? Because she's like,
right,
I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Like, how locked down is she?
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will find out. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a little bit of a Hail Mary on their part. Like, this was the only way they were going to get another movie made at this point. It's like,
I guess we have to pay Nev Campbell.
I guess we have to pay Nev Campbell. And,
we're going
to
pay her $10, but I guess we
can't. And let Kevin actually do something beyond just executive producing. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, Kevin did Teaching Mrs. Tingle, which we all know is a masterpiece. So,
I mean...
Like, he's got it in him, maybe.
I don't know. We'll see. I think some people are a little worried about that. I'm not too worried about it. He's been working on so many TV shows. He's been behind the scenes on so many things that he knows people who can help him if he doesn't know how to do something. You know, if there's something like he can't figure out on set, like there are plenty of people he can ask. From what I understand, he just didn't really like directing that much. That was what was so like surprising about this is that I guess this is going to be the thing that brought him back to do it, which, I get it. I mean, it's his baby,
And I think it's also, he probably didn't have a great experience with Tingle because it was a Weinstein film. And I'm sure he had of his two cents Columbine stuff, so it probably didn't feel like the movie he set out to make.
Probably.
So I'm sure he kind of has a mixed feeling about that around. But I feel like if he has a little more freedom this time, maybe he'll have a much better time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's hoping.
It'll be interesting.
I hope they have a lovely time and create something that they're both proud of. And
I hope so. I hope they don't rush something into production. I already saw there was like a script out there, and I'm like, how do we already have a script from this? Like after all the shit that went down, you know, it's can we give it like a little bit of time here? And
it's like, because there was a script, I guess that's the one Christopher Landon was going to do. And so I guess they threw that out and then just started from scratch. But I don't, it's all so confusing. I don't know what to expect.
I don't know.
I don't know.
We shall see. It's coming up on like the 30th anniversary of the first film, which is insane too.
Oh, like, gag me with a spoon.
I know. Fuck me gently with a chainsaw. Yeah.
Actually, fuck me very ungently with a chainsaw at this point. I mean, just rile me up because this is...
What is this, college? I'm ready to... Gilmore Wild here.
Yeah, I've been fucked gently too much with too many chainsaws. I want to put some more gas in that chainsaw.
Load me up.
Call me Sally Hardesty. I'm ready to go. Get me, Leatherface. Get me. I don't know. I don't know what to expect. It's all just going to, you know. It's just very hard to get excited about any sequel or reboot. Yeah. Did you see Barbara Crampton is producing a remake of Tourist Trap now? What is this?
I saw something about that.
Interesting. I liked it when it was called House of Wax 2005.
It was pretty good when it was called House of Wax. Yeah.
A very stellar film. I mean, I don't know how they're going to top that, but
I guess they can make it a remake of House of Wax in secret.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's gonna be hard to top everything about that movie.
Yeah, we'll see. It's we're only a couple months into the year. I haven't seen a really great horror film yet this year either, but I'm hoping something'll come and slap me in the face, and in a good way.
Well, I've been hearing good things about Immaculate and The First Omen, which both look very similar, so I don't know.
I'm not holding my breath for The First Omen here, but we'll see. It's another franchise film here.
I think you should, though, Kevin. I think we should both hold our breaths. We should have, like, a poll, like, which one of us is going to break first. Who takes the breath first? I will be there opening day, or the day after. For a matinee. I don't know. Because I'm elderly.
Well, you let me know how that is.
Yeah. I will. Because it's The Omen, and, you know, it's ridiculous. I love The Omen movies.
Yeah.
Ave Satani! I'm like, oh, God, something bad's going to happen. Oh, don't ride the elevator. Get away from that train. You're going to be decapitated. It's so much fun. Oh,
they are wacky.
They are. You never know how someone's going to die. It's very proto Final Destination, you know?
Yeah.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm. I love that stuff.
Which is also apparently in development. There's a new one of those. They started filming, I guess. That's happening.
I'm cool with that. I think that's a franchise that, you know, there's only been one of them that I really didn't like. That was the fourth one. The rest were pretty decent.
Yeah. Can we, like, find a way to bring back Devon Sawa? Like, nobody saw him die. Nobody saw that they fucking brick.
You know, it could have just been a conspiracy theory.
Yeah,
that someone posted. Because this was back in the day. When did Part 2 come out? Like, 2002 or something?
2003.
Yeah. So this was still the day of, like, internet urban legends and, like, Snopes and stuff, you know? So it could have just been, like, a Snopes article.
Well, maybe Death, like, reads the internet, and they're trying to fool Death, so they put it online and make it seem like he's dead. But then they're like, ooh, I'm still alive, Death. You didn't see that coming.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Death, like, travels through the Ethernet cords and is like, I see where he died. Okay, I'll move on.
This is some, like, fear.com shit here.
I'm into this. If Stephen Dorff could show up and just be sexy, I'd be fine with that, too.
That'd be great.
Sounds like a good time for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been opening.
No news about this. So, yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
I don't know where
casting
it's
or anything
go.
Else. So. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. At I mean, point, there's worse franchises to bring back from the dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, they could be like, let's make some more of those like witchcraft movies from the 90s that were there were like 4,000 of them, but I don't know a single person that actually watched them.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Do you remember those? Like, they look like erotic thrillers on the cover. It was like people like having sex with it, but there's like a witch behind them, like
Oh yeah, they put them in the back room at my video store in town.
It was the back. They were very back roomy kind of movies. I always assumed. Mm-hmm. I've never seen one, and I feel like I need to put it on my bucket list.
Maybe for our brain dead summer.
All. We'll just watch them all. Like 84 of them.
God, how many people?
There were a lot of them.
So many people will stop following our podcast at some point.
Like, what the fuck is this? Witchcraft? What?
They just went down a hole.
Oh, they never
Guys, it's
came
been like
out.
3 months of this. Yeah.
You're still covering witchcraft.
You're still covering witchcraft.
This is our podcast now. We just cover witchcraft. Witchcraft on Haunted Hill. That's what it is now. Someone's got to.
Love a witch. So, you know.
We do. Why not? We do love a witch. And erotic people being erotic and steamy?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. What a great time at the movies.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to do that. That'd be fun.
Yeah, why not? Anything to distract us. Yeah, just one. Yeah, yeah. Anything to distract us from an election year, so why not?
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, if they asked the candidates to pick their favorite witchcraft movie, it would be a lot more fun, I think.
Yeah.
But will they do that? No. They're like, what do you feel about global warming? Oh, who cares? Okay, I want to know about what's your favorite witchcraft?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it the third one? The sixth one?
Well, part five had time travel, which was, you know.
but the musical number in part eight was pretty...
It was pretty divine.
Show-stopping. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good. It was a toe-tapper. It's really, really, really strong.
Meryl took the Tony that year, but, you know, it's...
We all know who was robbed. We all know. We know. We know these things. Ridiculous.
We'll see. There's time.
I
guess.
Maybe. I don't know. We could all be dead tomorrow. But,
I mean, at this rate, who fucking knows? But, So we're covering a pretty good movie today.
If we join a suicide cult tomorrow... And it just happens to be on the day of the suicide. Wouldn't that suck? Like, you join a cult, you're like, this is going to be so much fun. And they're like, well, we've been doing this for like 15 years now, and we decided this is the day we're going to kill ourselves. And you're like, damn it, I just joined. I didn't even get to break in my uniform. I had none of the free love. Ugh, none of the free bagels either. Shit.
Yeah, my membership card just became active. And
it's freshly laminated. I can't. Mm-hmm. I've got to kill myself now? Oh, man. Oh.
Yeah, that would suck.
That would be my luck. Join a cult and there would be just group suicide day.
Yeah.
Like, disappointing. I'm gonna let my membership lapse. I don't need this in my life. I've got witchcraft movies to see, god damn it.
Well, yes, there are things to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we're jumping back a few years here. More years than I would care to admit, because this movie still feels recent to me, but it's been almost a decade here.
Wait, what?
So, this movie came out 2015, and it's 2024 now.
Oh, dear.
Well, technically, it had like a festival release in 2015, one of those. So it was really more of a 2016 movie. Let's not age ourselves too much here.
That's what I thought. I was like, 2016 sounds more on the money.
A little more. I mean, that was still 8 years ago, but still, it's, that was a pretty good year for horror, actually. You also had like Autopsy of Jane Doe that year and
classic.
The Witch and like...
God, The Witch was that long ago, too?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh my god!
That Hush movie that was decent.
Was that long ago. Too.
Yeah. A lot of these. Don't Breathe, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Train to Busan. But a bunch. A Split, that M. Night Shyamalan movie. Yeah.
God!
A lot of these movies are getting up there.
Oh.
And you also had all the Conjuring spinoffs were starting to come off. We're still in that kind of supernatural folk horror era that's really kicking off here. I think The Conjuring 2 came out that year as well. But The Invitation is, of course, directed by Karen Kusama.
Woo!
our dear Karen Kusama, who also, of course, gave us Jennifer's Bodhi.
For that, we worship her forever.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been wanting to talk about this movie for a while, and this was a good excuse because we're doing some Women's History Month stuff here, so it was a good reason to throw it into the mix here.
I was very happy when you suggested it, because I've only seen it once, and I was excited to watch it again.
It held up, I think. It's,
yes, very much so.
Yeah, yeah, it was quite good. We've talked about like one of the best like horror thriller films of that decade, I think. And there were some good films that decade, so that's saying something. It's up there.
Absolutely.
The screenwriters here, kind of weird. So they're these partners, Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi, they're mostly known for these big like action movies like Clash of the Titans, the remake, and like these buddy cop movies, Ride Along 1 and 2. But then they also wrote this 2001 Kirsten Dunst romance drama called Crazy Beautiful. You remember that movie?
I remember that. I never saw it, but I remember it being out.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I need to see it?
I don't know. I barely remember it, but it's a thing. It exists.
Is it like this movie? Are they in a cult?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Maybe.
Is Kiki Dunst in a cult in that movie? That would be so much fun.
Possibly.
She should do a movie where she's in a cult. She looks like someone who would like kick some cult ass.
She did that Showtime series that was about like the pyramid scheme.
What was it called? Yeah. Something in Florida.
Yeah. It was decent. Yeah. I watched it a couple years ago. I can't remember the title, but it was all right. Canceled too soon, but yeah. But yeah, so something tells me that maybe, like, no disrespect to these writers, but maybe Karen Kusama just kind of took this and did her own thing with it, because the writing credits don't suggest this being as good of a screenplay as it actually is, but who knows, maybe I'm not giving them credit.
Did you see the remakes of the Clash of the Titans, Kevin?
well, in fairness, I did not see
the art on screen. Because let me tell you, it was post-converted into 3D, which means it was art. That was art in 2010 or whenever it came out.
Well, they also did the 2002 science fiction action comedy film, The Tuxedo, starring Mr. Jackie Chan. So, you know.
Kevin, put your doubts to rest. I mean, come on. Jennifer Love Hewitt and Jackie Chan together at last.
It all makes sense.
A pairing we never knew we needed. Also have not seen that movie, but I remember when it was out, and I was like, I'm gonna say no.
Yep.
I'm gonna abstain from this one.
So yeah, I don't know. Again, maybe I'm not giving them credit here, but just knowing Karen Kusama, I have a feeling she kind of like put her own spin on this and did her own thing, but who can say? So this development started in 2012 here. There's not a lot of production history here, but originally the cast was supposed to include Luke Wilson, Zachary Quinto, Topher Grace, and Johnny Galecki in the male roles here. I don't know what happened with them. Maybe they couldn't afford them. I don't know. And then in July 2014, it's a couple years later, it was revealed that the production of the film had concluded all of a sudden, and the cast is totally different now. We got Logan Marshall Green. God, that is a mouthful.
I'll take a mouthful of him any day. Shit.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a cutie pie.
John Carroll Lynch, who's fucking creepy as hell in this movie. I mean, he's always creepy.
Oh, he's
in,
so
like,
good.
Anything,
he's
but, yeah,
so good in this.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
Pruitt. What kind of name is that? That's a cult name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's got to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brother Pruitt. So scary.
Sister Mary Pruitt. who else is it? Lindsay Burge, Michael Huseman, Macy Cordinialdi. I can't say this. That's someone.
You've got young Judy Garland, Tammy Blanchard. You do have
Tammy Blanchard in this, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was great as Judy in that what was it? Me and My Shadow.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember
like
that.
She played young Judy, and then Judy Davis played older Judy.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Fucking tour de force, both of them. If y'all have not seen that movie, it's like one of the only biopics that's actually interesting. Mm-hmm. It's really good. Yeah. And it was made for TV. And it was great. It's wonderful.
That's how it goes sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it's
very good.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was also Louise in the Bernadette Peters revival of Gypsy.
Mm.
In 2003, I think.
Interesting. I did not realize that. Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. She's very good in this. She's very delusional, which is the character is supposed to be. So it's good. So Karen Kusama had been influenced by the slow reveals in films like Let the Right One In and also the movie Festen, aka The Celebration, which is a fucked up movie. Have you seen the movie?
I have not seen that.
It is a fucked up movie. I recommend it. It's from like 1998. It's very similar about this family that just gets together for this I don't know, somebody's birthday or something, and like it's darkly comic, but again, very, very fucked up. A lot of shaky cam work, which not always a big fan of, but it's interesting. So the film premiered at South by Southwest on March 13th, 2015, which today is March 17th, 2024, in case anyone was doing the math.
Oh, wow.
And shortly after, it was announced that Drafthouse Films had acquired the distribution rights, went on to do some more festivals, and then had a limited release on April 8th, 2016. And then I think it went to video on demand pretty soon after that. I don't think it ever played around here in theaters. I ended up seeing it on.
It didn't for me either.
Demand.
I saw it on Netflix, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it was a Netflix. I think it was acquired by them at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, well reviewed by critics here. It's got about a 90% approval rating. The consensus is the film makes brilliant use of its tension-rich premise to deliver a uniquely effective and surprisingly clever slow-building thriller. That's true.
I'd agree with that.
Justin Chang of Variety says, a teasingly effective thriller, which represents Karen Kusama's strongest work in years. Not too many years, though, because Jennifer's Body was great, and I hope people acknowledge that.
We do, because, you know, we're sophisticated.
I think so. Needy.
We knew then it was a classic.
Yeah. Come on.
Now there's all these whippersnappers that are like, what? Jennifer's Body is the greatest movie ever made. Yeah, we knew that then.
Yeah, yeah, I could have told you that, you know?
We knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. Lisa Frankenstein. Okay. Okay. Just fine.
It was all right. It was cute. It was all right. It was just
Didn't
a cute
it.
Movie.
Yeah, no, it was cute. It's one of those movies you put on like at a slumber party when you're like 14 or something and you have a good time. You know?
I think that the young kids now that are seeing this, I think it will become a favorite of theirs.
I think so. I think so.
It could be like their Teen Witch or something, you know?
Right, right. Yes. It could work. We've gotten to the point where I realize not every movie is made for my age demographic anymore. So,
In fact, very few are.
The older you get, the fewer movies are made for you, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like I totally understand now. Like I've always understood to a point because it makes me mad. But like when an actress over 50 is like, oh, there's just no good parts. People just don't write parts for older people. And I'm like, I totally get it now.
Yeah.
They don't tell stories about people over 25, you know?
Exactly.
It's
true.
Lord.
It's true. Yeah.
Ugh.
What about us?
I know. Where's our invitation?
We need like a Netflix service that's like just for like people over 35, 30, you know, whatever. And less PC and lets us get away with a little more and stuff too. You know, that'd be nice. But
just stories about complicated older people.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Yeah, gosh.
Who'd have Tars and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, a Tar would be, Who'd have thunk, like, it would be the older generations that would now be like, wow, y'all are too conservative, younger kids, but here we are.
Right.
is what it is. Some more critic stuff here. Dead Central said, The Invitation works so well because it taps into our general distrust of the world around us. and how her survival instinct has been muted and ignored in order to maintain the appearance of being polite. Yeah, that's kind of true.
Yeah, you know, rewatching this, it reminded me of that movie See No Evil from
Yes, I thought that too. Mm-hmm, yep.
And I was like, oh, because that whole movie is also about people that are just like, we're going to be polite. We're going to stay like another day because they seem like, you know, like maybe we're just reading into this too much. And I was like, I wonder if they saw this movie and were like, let's take that whole like forced politeness thing to the next level.
I think so. Isn't there a remake of that coming out this year, like an English
remake? With James McAvoy. And the director is the one that did that movie Eden Lake from years ago with Michael Fassbender that was like a real downer.
It was a real downer.
With him directing it, I guess they'll keep the ending, maybe.
I guess.
But it's also Blumhouse, so I'm like, I don't know.
You fucking ask. Well, like, and the other... I don't understand why the remake. The other one was already in English, right? Like most of it. Like there were parts of it that weren't. But I don't think the whole thing was. Yeah, I don't.
Oh, it was like mix and match. Like some
mix
parts
and match,
were in...
but like
I think it was. Yeah, it's weird. Like I think Blumhouse also did that remake of Martyrs, right? And that was a disaster. Like they made that so squeaky clean that it was like, why even bother?
I have not been able to bring myself to ever watch that.
Oh, don't.
But I believe
it.
I believe it.
Save your time. Save your sanity. Never, ever do it.
Ugh.
You'd be better off watching Boogeyman from 2005 again.
Yeah.
And we all know how bad that is.
Yeah. Well, yes. Boy, let me tell you. I wish Hollywood just, would just stop touching these foreign language films for the most part, foreign films in general, because it's just, they never, very rarely, unless it's like The Ring, but everything else has been pretty not great.
It's like, I just don't think they understand what made the originals, and it's just it's not just the foreign films, it's movies that were made here. They don't understand what made the originals so unique to begin with. And why they were so celebrated. It's not, they always get like maybe the superficial stuff right sometimes.
Yeah.
But then everything else, they just don't like, they'll be like, well, we're going to remake Halloween. It's going to take place on Halloween. We're going to have Michael Myers. We're going to have a Laurie Strode. We're going to have a Dr. Loomis, but they're not written the same way they were in 78 where they were relatable and interesting. And they're like, why does this not work? Because you change the characters. They have the same names. But they're not the same characters that we've fell in love with. They forget stuff like that.
Right.
It's annoying.
It is. It is.
They don't get it. Yeah.
They do not get it at all. But where were we? That's most of the stuff here.
This movie was made.
This movie was made. They had a lot of creative control on this, I guess, because it was independently financed here, which is always nice because you can pretty much do pretty much whatever you want, and then you just have to worry about it getting distributed, basically. But so yeah, as you know from experience, you know, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
And then it's nicer that way. And this does have the feeling of a movie, like in some ways it felt like a movie that could have been made like in the 70s, like during that whole time of just like freedom, where it's you know, there's not a studio head dictating like, why isn't there a kill until like the last 10 minutes of the movie? We can't have that. We need a kill in the opening scene and then another one 20 minutes later. And I feel like if it was more of a studio based movie, every piece of ambiguity would be gone and it would just be slash fest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that is the slow burn nature is really what kind of makes or breaks the movie here. And it's trying to piece together, like you said, exactly what's going on, and the politeness, like we said, how everyone's just, you know, being nice, but as we know from Into the Woods, nice is different than good. And
that is true.
Yeah.
That show teaches people so much. It really
does. It's a great fucking show. You know?
Teachable show.
Yeah. There's still some schools that like don't do the second act at all, which I'm like,
oh, it makes me so mad. I'm like, this is the best part.
What the fuck?
And in the past year, I have had maybe five people somehow were talking about the show, And they're like, oh, yeah, Act 1's so much fun. Act 2, though, oh, what a slog. I'm like, excuse me. It's like, did you just see the Disney movie? Is that why you think that? Because I would agree with you in that case. Yeah. But no, like, if you've seen the show, it actually works very well. But thank you for playing.
Yes, you have to have Act 2. Yeah.
Yeah. Or else, what are the stakes? Everyone did just ends happily. Yay.
Right.
Good night, everybody. Yeah. Go home.
Yeah. Stakes like this movie. Yes, stakes like this great film here.
Lots of stakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Many a stake, if you will.
Scary stakes.
Scary stakes.
Colty stakes.
Colty stakes. Well done, Colt stakes.
Mm.
The food does look really good. Like when they're about to eat.
It
looks like the last meal type thing, like because they have the bread in the bowl and they're getting ready. It's creepy. I mean, but it looks good.
Well, and I also love the way it's shot. Like, usually, because I've seen this style a lot nowadays, especially on, like, a lot of Netflix original movies where everything always looks very warm and kind of orangey, no matter the tone or the genre. But for this movie, because it lulls you into this sort of false sense of comfort. Like, it feels like a very comfortable house, and it's very warm and cozy, and then, of course, it turns out to not be so cozy by the end, but so that's true. I think it really works here.
It does. You feel kind of sedated by the whole thing until it kind of again punches you in the face.
It's like being in like a womb, you know. It's like this very warm womb.
I would assume. I don't remember being in a womb.
I don't remember vividly, but I
mean, it was a little dark in there too, but
I don't know about you, but I could remember exactly all my time in the womb.
Well, you are the dream child, so it makes sense.
I was the dream child. Kevin, you weren't supposed to tell the secret. Oh, Freddy's going to find me now. Oh, damn it. I'm going to have to sit through his stand-up routine. Shit.
Oh, God.
I don't have time for that.
Get a Netflix special.
Like, hey, bitch. I'm going to be like, damn it, Freddy. Like, leave me alone. Stop calling everybody a bitch. It's so rude.
too much. Okay, what's going on in this film?
Well, there is a guy named Will, and he has is it a girlfriend or a wife? Kira?
I think just a girlfriend.
Okay, just a girlfriend.
I think.
Which makes the fact that he's dragging her to this dinner party with his ex and her new husband a little bit sus, you know. Because she doesn't need to be roped into this. Truly, Kira is the one innocent in this whole thing. Like, I felt so bad for her the entire time. Could just imagine, like, you're going to meet your boyfriend's friends and ex for the first time. And this is what goes down. I mean, this just, Lord.
Yeah, God, they all know each other. Really. So she's she's already kind of an outsider. And then she's forced to, like, defend for her life. It's crazy.
I feel so bad for her. But so they're going through the Hollywood Hills to go to their house, Eden and David. Mm-hmm. And they accidentally hit this coyote, and Will has to put it out of its misery and kill it. And one other thing I thought of, hasn't this happened in multiple films since then? Like, wasn't there a scene in Get Out where the lead has to kill, like, a deer that he hit or something?
I think
so. And then there was a scene in Talk to Me recently where the lead had to kill, like, a kangaroo that she hit or something. Or she didn't kill it or something. I can't remember. Yes. But this is, like, a trope now that, like, the lead character has to hit some sort of animal in a car.
Yeah, you're right.
Who would have thought this would become a trope? Thought? But it's just a thing now.
Well, and then the ring too, you know. Well, that gave us a CGI deer just coming out.
That's when it started.
That's
obviously
when it really kicked it off. Yeah,
that's the film that perfected it. Nothing's come quite close since. I miss that movie with Sissy Spacek in her little fright wig, just like covering her whole face from it's from Party City, and she's like,
oh god,
that child was evil. I'm like, why are we doing this to Sissy Spacek? But
so bad.
I digress. And so they make it to the party, and they're starting to meet everybody, and Will's ex-wife Eden looks great. She looks very happy, and which is odd because you can still tell Will's like a little, he's not in the best place. You just kind of get a vibe from him even in the first scene, even before he hits the coyote. He's just in kind of a weird, that weird griefy place that you're in after you lose someone that you love, and the whole world just seems kind of surreal, and you're kind of just going through the motions and sleepwalking through life. And but Eden has a big old smile, and she's very warm and welcoming, and it seems like whatever she's done has worked very well for her. She looks well rested, very happy, and her husband David also seems very down to earth and very nice, and they're all just, you know, hanging out and stuff. And and then Will sees this girl across the hallway who's in like a bedroom just without pants on, just letting the vag out, you know, and he's like, curious, and she's just like staring at him. He's like, what's going on there? And then eventually this girl comes out. Her name is Sadie, and she dresses like she's in a cult. Like, she's got like that weird like Manson girl kind of outfit on, sort of like flowery dress, and you're like, she seems like trouble.
And David kind of looks like David Koresh or something over here. He's just with his outfit. So it's they look culty from the get-go here, folks.
A little culty here.
Eden's, in this gown thing. I don't know what's going on here. Yeah, it's
big
it's
white gown, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, this Sadie girl basically lets it spill that she met David and Eden when they were in Mexico. And she's just been living with them ever since. And everyone's like, that's
right.
That's weird.
And there was something about how David and Eden met in a grief group while she was still with Will. So Will, you know, has a reason to be kind of pissed about this whole thing. And But he doesn't seem that upset about it. He's just like, I think he's kind of somewhat happy that she's moved on here. But he's kind of confused about the whole thing because this is not the Eden that he knew when they were, you know, when everything happened. So.
Right. Yeah. But he's definitely uncomfortable, but it's like he's got a good reason to be. And And then, like, no one can seem to get any good cell signals. And there's one of them that was supposed to be here, Choi, who has not shown up. And so that's weird. That's like the first real red flag. And everyone's like, where did he go?
And there's that, and then they mention at one point, like, why do you have bars in the windows? And she's like, well, you know, there's been break-ins around here.
I was alone, and there was a home invasion recently. And then they also always lock the door, and they don't keep the key in there, and that weirds Will out. He's like, why do you not leave the key in there? And they're like, is that a problem? Like, you just don't want to do it. Here, I'll just put the key back in. No big deal, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so at first you're like, okay, is he just like making up shit just because he feels uncomfortable? Like, you don't really know. But then again, it is kind of weird. So you're kind of on his side. Because really the whole movie is from his POV. So like, we're basically on his side the whole time and can understand why he feels the way that he does.
Yeah.
And then eventually this dude knocks on the door and they just let him in. And they're like, this is Pruitt. He's our other friend we met from Mexico. And they're like, hi, who are you? And he's this random guy who's just like lurking about. And then they all decide like, okay, we're going to just let you know we found this group. And they're like, oh, my God, you're in a cult. And they're like, no, it's not a cult. It's not a cult. Like, it's just, you know, this group of people that come together, and they have this little presentation on like a laptop that they show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's this cult leader who's like, this is the reason I do this. We're coming together. And then it shows a clip of him with a dying woman who's a member of the cult, and she's surrounded by other members of the cult, and she's dying, and they're just like, go to the plane, it's gonna be fine. And everyone's like really disturbed because it's just this footage of this woman dying.
Yeah.
And everyone's just like, why are you showing us this? This is very weird. Yeah. And Will's definitely a little on edge, but some of them seem even more disturbed by it. Like, I think Gina is really disturbed. She's because she's the one whose boyfriend is Cho, who's still not there.
Mm-hmm.
So she's really disturbed. And there's another character. Oh, God, is her name like Carrie or something?
Sadie. Crap.
That's
the other one.
Claire. She's the one who's really weirded out because they start to play this game called I Want, mm-hmm. where they go around the room and they each talk about what they want, and things start to get kind of like weirdly sexual, and she's like, okay guys, I think I'm out. I'm just gonna go. And they're like, oh, but you should stay. We have so much more to do. And she's like, nah, I'm good. And so they let her leave, but the problem is that Pruitt is parked behind her. So he's like, oh, I'm going to go move my car so you can leave.
Right.
And Will is watching this whole thing from the window, and he sees Pruitt move his car. Claire leaves and gets down the driveway. But then Pruitt shows back up and is like, hey, Claire, I've got something to tell you. And then right at that point, he's interrupted. And he turns away from the window and doesn't see what's going on.
And David just like completely gaslights him and is like, you know, you have really been, you know, scorning our hospitality this whole time. Mm-hmm. And now you think there's something going on here. Just, again, completely gaslighting this guy.
Yeah.
And there was also this weird confrontation between Eden and the other friend, Ben, who we haven't really talked about. But where like she slaps him and
because he disrespects negative about something. The religion.
Yeah. So that again, there's a lot of red flags starting to build up here.
Yeah, and she's on some sort of barbiturate.
Yes, he finds these pills.
That Will discovers.
Will finds, yeah, uh-huh.
And so he's telling people, like, there's this gay couple, Tommy, mm-hmm. and Miguel. Yeah, mm-hmm. Tommy and Miguel. And he tells them like, yeah, she's got these pills there, and they just immediately are like, yeah, Will here thinks you guys are on pills. And they're like, thanks, dude. That really doesn't help. And so yeah, it just keeps ratcheting up, and you're just like, what is going on here?
Right.
And
they all sort of notice that Will is like freaking out this whole time, and like again they go up to him like one by one and they're like, hey, is everything okay? You know, everything's fine here. I don't know why you're like freaking out about this. And so that makes him feel even more weird, and the whole thing is just mm-hmm. Escalates.
Yeah, because like I think Gina comes up and she says something that I thought was really truthful in a way, where she's like, yeah, like I was gonna contact you, but I just thought, oh, maybe I should like be more hands off, you know, and just let you go through the grieving process, and I guess I just kept it going for too long to the point where we kind of lost touch, because I don't think he's seen a lot of these people in like 2 years or something. Mm-hmm. Like it seems like it's
been a while.
He definitely hasn't seen Eden in about two years.
Right.
So like they're all just trying to, you know, patch things up, which is awkward when you haven't seen someone for so long. And
it is, but it's also just kind of adult friendships in that regard too. Like there's so many friends that I see like once every 3 years or something, but
it's
it is what
so
it is.
Sad, but that's just being an adult. That's they never teach you this stuff. Like
no, they
you're
don't.
Gonna have
they
these
don't.
Great friends, and at a certain point, you're not going to see them for 5 years. And then, like, it's like, oh, my God, no.
And then you see him, and it's great for, like, one time. And then it's,
oh,
like,
it's wonderful.
Right, you're
it's like
just,
no time has passed.
No time has passed.
And then you see them in another few years. It's horrible.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And, yeah, so Claire's gone. And now Will, he keeps sort of disappearing. Like, he goes to see his kid's former room and stuff. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's like hanging out outside just to get some fresh air and stuff. And he sees that he got a missed call from Choi.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that he was actually here before everybody else. And he's like, but he's not here now. What the fuck? So he goes and he confronts them. And he's like, I got this call. And it says he was here. So where is he? Like, he's got to be here. Yeah. And he just like loses his shit. And makes a fool of himself and is like, where are they? Ah, he's like losing his mind. And then all of a sudden, Choi just like walks in and is like, I'm sorry, I'm late. And he's like, oh no, what have I done? Maybe I am just crazy, you know?
Yeah. And the Pruitt guy has given this weird, has he given this speech yet?
Oh my God. About, like, I think so, yeah.
It's one of the most disturbing parts of the movie, honestly. And like, this is
it's just very strange. He basically abused his wife and then to the point where she fell and died because she hit her head. So he went to prison, and then it's okay now because he found the cult, and now he's he's a better person. And everyone's just like, what the fuck? Who invited him?
Like, yeah. He's like, I don't feel guilty anymore. I've chosen to let those emotions go. And yeah, it's
that
fucked
doesn't
up.
Sound healthy.
Pretty fucked up here. And the way they shoot that scene, too, it's like, you don't see their reactions. Like, it's just his face the whole time. And it's so awkward.
Like a slow pull in on his face. And then it cuts to a reaction shot. I think it might be on Gina.
I think so. Yeah.
And she's just like,
what the fuck?
Like, what is happening? It's almost like kind of funny in a way because of just that cut where she's just like, where her face is basically doing exactly what the audience's face is doing at that exact same moment. Exactly. Just like, can we get out of here, please? I don't want to be here anymore. Mommy, come pick me up.
Like, exactly.
I don't want to spend the night. So Will makes a ass of himself and everyone's like, it's okay, like, don't feel bad. And then I think is it Miguel's birthday?
I think so. It's somebody's birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Eden goes and gets a birthday cake and then like they start passing out all this wine, like everybody gets a glass and Will's decides that it's all been poisoned. So he just starts like smashing all the glasses and everyone's like, what are you doing? But then Sadie gets really pissed off and she's like, that's not part of the plan. He's ruining the plan, and just starts attacking him to the point where he like shoves her and she hits her head on like a table and starts like convulsing on the floor. And they're like, oh my God, I think you've killed her. And she's like bleeding out. Right. Right. And then they're like, she doesn't have a pulse. And they're like, oh no. And they're like, no, Gina, she doesn't have a pulse. And he turns and he sees Gina's like face down, like foaming at the mouth, and she's dead.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, wait, what the fuck? And then all of a sudden they start pulling out the guns. David's like pulling out guns and like knives and shit. And it just starts like shooting everybody. Yeah, and so now everyone's just on
Miguel.
The run. Yeah, he's been shot. Happy birthday, Miguel.
Right? He was trying to help Gina here and then gets shot. And then who else dies next? I can't remember.
I think who did die next? I think
Ben
eventually
dies.
Ben dies.
Yeah. It's so chaotic here at the very end. Yeah.
It really is.
Ben dies.
Choi dies pretty soon too, right?
I think Choi got shot as well.
Yeah, it's like he shows up for like 5 minutes and then gets killed.
Yeah,
poor,
get killed.
Poor Choi. R.I.P. Choi.
Eventually, it's just like Will and Kira and the
and
gay guy, Tommy.
Yeah. They're the last ones. And Sadie is like bleeding out on a couch somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody seems
I think
it.
She's attacked Tommy at some point with like a knife and he got away. But then she's just bleeding out and she's got a fire poker in her hands. And at some point they walk up to her to take the fire poker as a weapon.
Yeah.
And then they confront Eden, who just decides to shoot herself in the stomach because she's
upset. The stomach for whatever reason. Yeah.
Because I guess the whole plan was to poison everybody because it was going to be so beautiful. It was going to be so lovely, which it didn't look that beautiful for Gina.
Not
so I don't know.
Much. Yeah.
It doesn't look so pretty. And so I guess Eden's just like, oh, well, I guess I'll just have to shoot myself. And she does in the stomach, which doesn't seem very, I mean, wouldn't you aim for the head?
That's
I feel
exactly,
like if you're going to really do it, you know.
She's off a rocker, but still, yeah.
She's a little dramatic. Like she just wants a really protracted death scene.
Right.
You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. She's like, if I'm going to do this, it's going to be with a little style and flair. Mm-hmm. And so she just starts bleeding out everywhere. And then David shows up with a gun. And at some point they get his gun. I think Kira gets a gun but discovers that there's not enough bullets in it or something. I think
something
they get
like
Pruitt's gun maybe.
Yeah
like they kill him maybe or something
like that. Yeah.
It's so chaotic. I can't even remember.
It's so crazy.
I just watched this movie.
I know Tommy comes out of nowhere and like is able to kill David
because he
and then it's
him.
And then it's pretty much just the three of them.
Yeah.
At the end there.
Everybody's dead except for those three, and they walk outside to the backyard. And earlier, David had gone out and lit this little red lantern thing.
Right.
Yeah. Which looked weird and kind of suspicious. Mm-hmm. But now, all of a sudden, Will looks out into the Hollywood Hills and sees all of these red lanterns lit up on the hill, meaning there's all these cult members just, I guess, doing the same thing at this exact same time.
And you hear all these helicopters flying over and like explosion type sounds. And yeah, it's like, oh no. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh no. But you know, for some reason, I remember there being more red lanterns the first time I saw this.
Mm.
Looking at it now, I'm like, oh, that's not too many. It's like, you know, maybe like 10. Like,
too many, I wouldn't really. I mean, I wouldn't really believe too many, you know, I don't think every house in LA is going to have a cult member. But maybe, it is LA. I don't know.
Have you been to LA, Kevin?
Don't they make a comment about that at some point? Like, yeah, they're a little weird, but this is LA. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because everyone's all like new age here. Like, oh, well, I just went to this. I was so depressed, but I went to this retreat in the desert. And oh, my God, they didn't let me have water for 20 days. And now I feel like everything's realigned and I'm just a new person. Yeah. Like there's all these weird little things that they have there. You know, it's like that movie Safe, you know, where they just like take Julianne Moore to all these random places.
Yeah, facilities.
It's like that shit.
Yeah.
They love that shit there.
They love it. They love it.
Yeah. It would surprise me. Yeah.
Xenu love him.
Oh, Xenu. Xenu will save us. He or she or they. I don't. What is the gender of Xenu? Does anyone know?
It's hard to say.
Does Xenu have a gender? Maybe not. Xenu is all of us.
Could be.
But yeah, this ending is so scary. It's just that image.
It's ballsy.
All those
like,
lanterns just.
It would have been a disturbing
film
even without this ending, but it's like the little cherry on the cake here. It was,
God.
It's fucked up.
And I remember this being released around the time that Trump was elected.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was around that time. I remember this ending feeling like, oh shit. Like this feels like this is definitely a movie of its time. Like this feels like, cause it's just all this culty stuff that's coming to the surface these past, I guess, my God, almost decade now, which blows my mind. This movie is maybe even scarier now than it was then, which is hard to believe. Cause it was pretty fucking scary then.
I think so. I mean, we're even more at war with like each other than we were then, which I didn't think we could be. But I think they're often, not to put on my like historian hat here, but what was I gonna say? Like there are times in history when the horror movies are often like just monsters and fighting these outside forces, and then there are times when it's like us against each other, like you know. And I think this. We've kind of been still in that era, I think, to a lot of degrees. I mean, there's still monster movies, but there was that folk horror era where even when it was supernatural, it was still very rooted in like humans fighting each other, like The Witch and stuff like that. And Get Out. And
The Witch was, I mean, the scariest parts of that weren't the parts with The Witch. It was just the fact that the family goes insane and turns on each other because of their own puritanical bullshit, you know?
Yeah. And same with like Hereditary. Like the most disturbing parts of that movie are like just watching this family just totally fucking fall apart. And it's,
It's just Toni Collette sobbing on that fucking floor. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like that's harrowing right there. God.
Right.
You don't need ghosts and ghouls. No. I mean, that stuff right there is hardcore. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. This movie is just. Like we said, it's taut. It's
taut.
An hour and 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. Doesn't feel like it.
Nope.
Flies by.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful performances.
Mm-hmm.
Smart writing. Brilliant direction.
Yeah.
I mean, just fantastic. Ugh. Everything about this movie is just firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
It's one of the scariest movies in the past 10 years easily.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I can't say enough good things about this movie. Yeah. It's just, and I really hope if you haven't seen this, you have not listened to this episode yet, because I don't want to spoil anything. And I know we spoiled everything about this movie.
Yeah.
But just,
yeah.
Oh, it's too late now, but we did try to warn you before, but you know,
we did.
Don't listen to us unless you've seen the movie.
It's I don't think we mentioned that Sadie tried to fuck Will at one point. That was a little side plot here.
But I mean, I think you could imagine she would. She's like a very like free spirited like type.
Yeah.
Like we said, she dresses like a Manson girl, so that's just what you expect from them.
Yeah, and he's like wanting her to, or she's wanting him to like choke her and be violent with her. It's you can tell this is girl. Yeah,
she had some issues.
Her home life, some questions.
Yeah, these cults. Because I've gotten really into these cult documentaries in the past year, and there were so many good ones. They're just the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. And the funny part, well, funny and sad, like life, is seeing a lot of these people who have survived these be interviewed, and they talk about why they joined in the first place, and or like there was one. What's the name of that one? It was the one about the shit. I forgot the name.
Heaven's Gate?
Woman. No, it was a woman who started this cult. She turned blue. Who was the one that turned blue? Because she was taking some weird shit to keep her alive or something. She had cancer, and then they mummified her corpse and like kept her alive. And it was like a kind of a Weekend at Bernie's kind of a situation for a little while. But there are some members of this cult that are still in the cult, even though their leader is dead, and they were interviewing them, and you could just tell they were so lost. Like they were they probably didn't have a great education. They came from homes that weren't so great. They were neglected or whatever. And you feel really bad for them.
Yeah.
Cause they're just not all there. Like they're just not functioning the way an adult should. And you can see why they roped into this.
Yeah, that's why they're easy to take advantage of for that reason. It's sad. Unfortunately, I think it's even easier these days with like social media and stuff that you can you can get anyone to believe anything. And I think it's going to get even worse in this like AI age and everything. So it's
absolutely we're so lonely and alienated, and there's all these online communities that will prey on people. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. They'll say, "Oh, you are you lonely? Feeling down? Work got you sad? Come join us for a free workshop where you're gonna get. I want to start a cult. Can we start a cult?
Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret.
Is it just us worshiping Liza Minnelli? That might work.
Well, yeah. Or we were talking about our drop dead gorgeous quote or cult that could totally happen too. You know?
We could do that. That might be fun. If y'all would like to join, it's going to start off as very fun and free love. But of course, we're going to have to kill ourselves eventually.
I mean,
that's how it goes. It's how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah. But who knows? It could be like 50 years from now. It could be like tomorrow. You don't know. But, you know, just take the leap, you know?
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
Take a leap off a cliff. We'll be like those people in Midsommar that are just like, I'm 78 years old. I'm sick of it. Woo!
Oh, yeah. That was another like, culty Splat. One there, wasn't it? Yeah,
another cult
there was, movie. There was another, what was a Kill List? Did you see that one?
I didn't see that. Is it good?
It's decent. It's got another like really crazy last act. It's worth checking out. There's some good, culty movies in that time period. Well, like we said, it was like in many ways like a neo-70s kind of thing where we had a lot of these folk horror cults.
Elevate really big then too.
Socially relevant type stuff, horror stuff. So yeah. It was a pretty good period, you know, looking back in the horror movies that came out that decade. Absolutely. Particularly in the latter half of the decade, it was pretty good time period. Now I have no fucking idea what's going on with horror. Like I look around and I'm like, really it just seems either. So fucking all over the place. Like I have no idea. And in some ways I guess that's okay. They're trying that everybody's trying to do different things, but nothing has really stuck the past year or so. Yeah.
No, there's not really any major trends there were kind of around this time. It was really The Witch, I think, that really started the whole folk horror, trauma, grief, horror, elevated horror thing.
Yeah, I can't think of too much before that that was like really popular in that decade. So yeah, it was probably the one that really kind of,
And, but I know a lot of people give that trend a lot of guff, you know, because they're like, oh, they're not fun. They're not fun to watch. I want to watch Chopping Mall every day. I'm like, I do too. But you know what? These are very well done films for the most part. Some are just shit, but most of them were quite good, I think. So
men.
I don't care if they're like, well, there was men. Yes, there was men, which, you know, at least I will say this about Men. It gave me something I had never seen before, which was a Russian nesting doll giving birth to itself. That was fascinating at the end.
That was different. Yeah. On a technical level, it's a fascinating movie. It's just what the fuck? And
what's it about?
Yeah.
What was the point? What were we supposed to learn?
What's going on?
Was there a moral? Was there a perspective on life that we hadn't seen or heard before? I don't know what it was.
I don't know either. Yeah.
But I know I laughed really hard in the theater.
Right.
I had a great laugh. I don't know if it was intentional, but I had a great laugh. So it was a win for me. Whenever you can find a way to laugh, it's
always a good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, this movie and like Autopsy Jane Doe, like we talked about, I'm just think from that decade, like the Suspiria remake is quite good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I made a whole list and then I can't think of it. But yeah, there was Hereditary was quite good. The ending's a little wonky, but it's a really good movie. But yeah, it's pretty
good
time.
It's been a decade.
Yeah, yeah. In that...
because also I feel like for the first time in, I think in history, actually, the genre has been taken somewhat more seriously. I mean, still, we can't get Toni Collette a fucking nomination for Hereditary, which is a crime. Mm-hmm. But when something like Get Out, you know, was up for Best Picture and Best Actor and all these things, I thought, oh, this is interesting. Critics are taking these movies a little more seriously. They realize, oh, there is something you can say through a horror film that is worthwhile. And I've been tickled by that. I like that.
And they're calling them horror movies, which is nice.
Yes.
You know,
they're not saying, oh,
psychological thrillers.
Elevated thriller. It's a social thriller. Mm-hmm. I have seen some of that shit, though.
Some of it, but not as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, back in the day, the entire cast and crew at the press junket would have to be like, oh, yes, I love psychological thrillers. That's why I signed on to do this film. I was so excited. Right. I love a good psychological thriller. And it's like a movie where, like, someone's being ripped apart on screen in graphic detail. You're like, really? Mm-hmm. Psychological.
Yeah.
Is it? Is it really?
Yeah.
I saw your eyeball fly out. That's not psychological.
Exactly. Exactly.
They're so silly. I'm glad they don't do that as much now. It really makes me happy.
Yeah, me too.
That's nice. So if anything, this decade was good for that. It did give horror a little bit of respectability. Maybe that's why people don't like this decade as much. They kind of like their horror to be like sort of underground and naughty.
There's
and stuff
that
like their parents wouldn't support or something.
And like you said, like a lot of the teenagers like the goofy stuff, and like the stuff is not particularly goofy. It's, you know, pretty serious, and finding that the difference is there too. But I don't know. I mean, I think but again, if you look at like the long-term trends, it's like it's always been like that, where like you have several years where horror gets really serious and then it gets really goofy again and then it gets serious again. It's like it's always kind of back and forth like that. So I don't know why people are always so like surprised when there's like a big shift like this. I'm like and then you have the people who think like, I don't know, like that horror didn't exist before slashers, basically. And I'm like, okay,
oh my God,
there's been like there's quite a bit of, you know, decades worth of horrors here.
Upsetting.
Yeah.
I'm like, have you heard of a little lady named Baby Jane?
Yeah, okay. Come on. Whatever happened to her?
What did happen to her?
Yeah.
You know what? She was an icon.
Yeah.
And you should pay your respects, children.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Whatever happened to Baby Jane?
Do you have an overlooked gem for today?
Boy, do I. So I came upon this film years ago. Mm-hmm. Never got a chance to see it because it was only released on VHS years ago. and it was out of print, so I never got to see it. It's called Blonde Death.
And is the one that was shot on video that we were, I saw you.
It is shot on video. Yes, yeah. It is shot on glorious lo-fi video. And it's sort of like a John Waters movie, with even less money and resources. And it's just, it's so weird. I think it was shot in like Florida, so it just feels, you know, sticky and gross. And it's about this young girl who has this horrible father and stepmother who used to be a hoe, but then she found God. So now she's like very like, you know, religious and conservative and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they leave for some reason on the weekend, and she's left alone at the house, and this guy comes in and does like a home invasion, but then they sort of fall in love and become like this sort of like Bonnie and Clyde sort of group. It's not, I don't even, is it really even a horror movie? I don't know. I guess it is, because like a lot of the people die, but it's sort of like a sort of a gritty exploitation movie. It's horror adjacent. And it's just really sleazy and really, really queer and just funny and campy. And it's everything. I just want everybody to watch this movie because it's so entertaining.
Nice.
And it's just, it's great. Vinegar Syndrome partnered with, I think it's Bleeding Skull, the label. And I think they put it out on Blu-ray. And it's just, if you have any interest in films of this sort, very underground, gritty, lo-fi kind of stuff, check it out. Mm-hmm. It's just so entertaining. Oh. Mm. It's heaven.
Sounds good heaven. To me.
It was worth the wait.
How does it compare to something like Offerings?
Well, what can compare to Offerings, Kevin? It's a one-of-a-kind experience if you've never seen the original Halloween. And it is... it's just got so much to offer the audience. It's, you know, Offerings, I think, had probably a little more money. Because I think that was actually shot on film. So this is most definitely not shot on film.
Okay.
So it's sort of like watching someone's really offbeat family... home movies from like the mid-80s.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of an aesthetic.
Interesting.
Which makes it feel more raw and kind of immediate. And
mm-hmm.
And the acting's very enthusiastic. It's very like community theater, but in like a really fun way. It's like good community theater where you're like, okay, this person's not exactly Meryl Streep, but man, they're giving it their all. You got to respect that.
Yeah,
got to tip the hat.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so great.
Nice.
But yeah, now that you mentioned it, I would also recommend Offerings to anyone that hasn't seen it.
Well, I watched it because it was part of our Halloween recommendations like 4 years ago or whatever. And I was like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Because it is just Halloween for people that don't have the time to sit down and watch it, you know?
Yeah. It was.
I think it's just as long. I don't know why I said that. Because if you have time to watch that, you have time to watch Halloween. But I don't know.
This is true. Oh, yes. Well, I think we have one more Tuesday left this month. So, we got some good picked out for that one, too.
Another scary one.
Another scary one. Intense. Another recent-ish one. So
very recent, yes.
If you want to try to guess.
You're never going to guess.
You're never going to guess.
Or you might. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
Should we have like a poll?
We could.
Lunchtime poll.
Yeah. What do you think it's going to be?
No.
I do kind of wonder. I mean, I feel like the people who have seen like The Invitation seem to enjoy it for the most part. But I don't know if it's because it was directed by, you know, a woman, if that made any difference in terms of like it harder to get distribution or anything. I don't know. Again.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's just it's the kind of movie that's rarely made these days. I mean, because it is. I mean, when it gets violent, it is violent, but it's not a gory movie. It's not it's not a movie that has a lot of jump scares. It's not a traditional horror film in that sense. I think when a lot of people think horror, they think like jump scares and gore and monsters and stuff. And this is a much more subdued, kind of quiet, slow burn. And those are just harder to sell, no matter
what. It is. It's also tough, like, you know, as a female director, like if you make a film that is not successful one time, then they think that's going to be like that every other time. Like she also made this,
pisses me off.
That Aeon Flux movie, which was like apparently a fucking mess in like 2005.
Yeah.
But then really had to fight to get Jennifer's Body made. And I'm sure has had to fight like every fucking film she ever makes. And in a way that I think a lot of male directors established male directors wouldn't have to, you know, fight that much, but.
Yeah. I always find that fascinating. It seems like a lot of men get just chance after chance, like five of their movies back to back could just bomb horrifically and they'd still be like, let's give Stanley here another shot. And you're like, why?
I can't remember. Oh God. Yeah. I saw some writer who I didn't even know had written all these bad movies. And I was like, how does he keep getting work? I can't even remember what it was, but I was just like, what, how?
Maybe he works for cheap. Like maybe that's the trick. Like, I will write this movie for $114, and they're like sold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe they still maybe. Like. I don't know. Maybe they just work for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Or maybe their cousin is like the head of the studio.
I mean, like, that's a total possibility. Yeah,
there's
as well.
Also that.
Yeah.
Or like they were like frat bros and
yeah. Yeah,
like I'm gonna give my bro another shot. I know his last six movies made $1 million combined, but I'm gonna give him one more shot.
I think this next one it's gonna be the one.
I mean, we're gonna remake Blood Diner as a musical. I think it's finally gonna work. This is gonna be the one. It's gonna be in 3D. How can it lose? Yeah. It's 3D.
Yeah,
and no one goes to see it once again. It's like,
exactly. Oh, I remember who I was thinking of. This is kind of mean. Jeff Wadlow.
Oh no.
Sorry.
Oh right.
Like
someone at Blumhouse must love him.
Yeah, because his films, I don't think they've been huge box office hits either, as far as I know. And yet,
no.
And they have not been critical hits. So I don't.
No.
I guess I'm looking at the.
He's made
numbers
many.
Here. Yeah, he's made quite a few here. Actually, these have done better at the box office than I thought. So I guess that's why. I had no idea. Like, Truth or Dare made almost $100 million at the box office. Who fucking knew?
I'm ashamed to admit that I supported that film in the theater. I did. I thought, this is going to be a winner. It wasn't.
It wasn't.
But it did make me laugh.
It did make me laugh. I don't know if I was supposed to laugh, but I did laugh. And
I mean, it was really funny. And what I loved about that was there was a line of ADR that was clearly added after the trailer was released, and everyone was talking about the ghoul's face looks like it's a Snapchat filter, and they put that line into the movie. Like they just had someone off screen be like, that looks like a Snapchat filter. I was like, well played.
Yeah,
at least you're acknowledging that this is ridiculous. God,
yeah,
man, that was a doozy.
Yeah. I mean, hey, whatever. He's getting work. Good for him. Who am I to judge here? But
good for you, Jeff. Get your work in. You.
Get your work.
Make that cash.
Yep. As always, folks, you can follow us. Facebook, Twitter, HOHH Podcast. Instagram, Homos and Haunted Hill. All one word. You can leave us a review on iTunes if you would like. Thank you to everybody who has. Like I said, we have one more film left for this month, and then we'll see what we do in April. I don't know.
Yeah.
Could be anything.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Don't know.
It's all offerings all month long.
Oh, God.
It's a deep dive into that one movie.
Oof. We probably could.
Are you ready?
Probably could.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. I've been ready. Have a good start of spring here, folks, and
Spring has sprung, so go spring and sprung
spring some more. Okay, well, goodbye everyone.
Yeah, bye y'all.